you don't have to love my right-wing point of view, but right-wingers need love too. One more time, here we go. Right-wingers need love too. We all need love, indeed we do. Now you don't have to love my right-wing point of view, but right-wingers need love. Right-wingers need love. Right-wingers need love too.
Friends, Romans, Kentuckians, and all you Americans who are the sons and daughters of immigrants, and that would be all of you who are not named Tonto, I want to welcome y'all. And howdy to you too, Tonto. Welcome to America. It's Lonesome Al Barger here venting my spleen, because I'm such a howling mad right-winger that I make Ludwig von Mises sound like John Maynard Keynes. Also, like Fiona Apple, every single night's a fight with my brain. So here I am sharing the struggle with you. This day of our Lord, July the 30th of 2012. I'm here today to talk about immigration, about which I have mixed feelings between my best libertarian and Christian humanitarian instincts versus practical problems on the ground.
My whole family's been having nothing but trouble with immigrants ever since they come to this country.
Now, I am well known as a right-wing extremist. But first off, immigration really has got to be voluntary. That's pretty much settled law, unless Chief Justice Roberts changes his mind again at the last minute with some innovative legal arguments. But for starters, my nephew and the apple of his late grandpa's eye, Jacob Barger, writes to ask why he can't own Canadians. One of these days, I'm going to have a long talk with that boy. Now, granted, though, the boy's got a point. I explained to him that according to the white Christian narrative of American exceptionalism that I espouse, I do have to acknowledge the revealed word of God in Leviticus chapter 25, where the rules in such things are prescribed, starting with verse 44. Both thy bondmen and thy bondmaids, which thou shalt have, shall be of the heathen that are round about you. Of them shall ye buy bondmen and bondmaids. Moreover, of the children of the strangers that do sojourn among you, of them shall ye buy, and of their families that are with you, which begat in your land, and they shall be your possession. And ye shall take them as an inheritance for your children after you, to inherit them for a possession. They shall be your bondmen for ever. But over your brethren, the children of Israel, ye shall not rule one over another with rigor. So, yes, by the law, Jacob has the right to own Canadians. Well, except that Christ came to do away with the law. But that's another discussion. But son, why in the name of all that's holy would you want to own worthless Canadians? What with their beady little eyes and their heads full of lies? Because, he explained, it would be fun to throw a hockey ticket in the middle and watch a bunch of them fight to the death. These kids today are so frivolous. Sure, Canadian death matches are fun, but they're wasteful and extravagant. Plus, it's expensive to own people. You have to feed them and water them and take them to the vet if you can afford it. If you're going to own people, you'd definitely be better to invest in a couple of Mexicans. An average Mexican would do you more work than several Americans, or of at least 10 Canadians, especially, of course, the dreaded French Canadians. I'm just saying that they're undeniably more useful. But ownership involves expensive maintenance, so like anything else, it's cheaper to just rent them. This is a point that most Americans get. You can go down to the Home Depot to buy shingles and rent you a truckload of Mexicans who'll go up on a 90-degree roof and nail them shingles down for $5 an hour. Heck, you could spend that much on the health insurance benefits for a unionized American and probably wouldn't get half the work out of them. Work them Mexicans like rented mules all day and drop them off tired and hungry on the corner with a little change to buy beans and rice when you're done. It's a common trope to the point of being a cliché that Mexicans will take jobs that few Americans would. But this has become a cliché because it is true, and millions of black and white and semi-multicolored Caucasian Americans see it every day. I vaguely remember in my early youth there being a bit of a stereotype of lazy Mexicans who just want a siesta all afternoon. But that was in the 1960s when there weren't that many of them here. That's definitely one stereotype that died a quiet death in the face of actual experience. The new stereotype is simply the hard-to-deny reality that, for starters, a whole lot of our produce would rot unharvested without the help of cheap, hard-working Mexicans. But then, that's also what I really want to believe. My general libertarian principles and my natural humanitarian Christian instinct favor open borders. Those borders are just arbitrary, artificial lines on a map, I says. And why should a poor Mexican be denied the reward for a laudatory work ethic just because they were born south of parallel some and such? I surely thank the Lord for my pure good fortune in simply being born in America. A lot of the conflict was distilled in a classic Warner Brothers cartoon short introducing entitled Speedy Gonzales. Before the hero shows up, we start with the vision of the misery of a bunch of emaciated, starving Mexican mice in their little sombreros. They're on the wrong side of a fence marked International Boundary, which was patrolled by Sylvester the Cat, who had already eaten a fair number of their brethren who were literally dying to get across that boundary. Basically, Sylvester represents Republican immigration policy. Support Sheriff Joe! By the pile of empty sombreros, one would judge that dozens of mice had died trying to make it a few yards past that international boundary to get to the giant cheese factory. Exactly. We have a bunch of poor, starving Mexican mice to whom America is a giant cheese factory. And hey, they're more than willing to work for their cheese. But that best ideal inevitably runs into somewhat tougher realities on the ground. The big obvious theoretical problem is having both open borders and also a welfare state. Max and the point out every poor person on the planet could just show up and apply for food stamps. An unending supply of Democrat votes granted. But the Republicans can only prop up so many freeloaders on the system before it all goes bankrupt. We're trying to absorb tens of millions of Mexicans and Central Americans who may have good work ethics and all, but start out way behind in education and resources or even just knowing the language to be able to just do normal day-to-day business. They make maybe enough money to kind of halfway get by, but certainly not enough to afford medical insurance, for one thing. Part of the problem is that the cost of a lot of cheap immigrant labor is de facto shifted from employers getting by without paying near a living wage, and then socialized to taxpayers. Mexicans can qualify for public assistance. And you can hardly blame poor people for taking free stuff that's offered to them. Hey, for starters, we're simply not going to turn people away from emergency rooms to die in the street because they don't have a green card or an insurance card. Can't be doing that, so we're going to socialize that cost in different ways. At that, a lot of hospitals in some areas are strained physically and financially from dealing with this many indigents. We've already got plenty of those among the native-born. In addition to which, we're going to pay to educate the immigrant children, because that would be just too obviously stupid and wrong not to. that would be pretty grossly limiting their possibilities for any decent legal employment and generating more pressure for those young people to get on a bad track. Got to school the youngins. Beyond those pretty much undeniable basics, we're providing all kinds of other assistance among this group, food stamps and whatnot. We're already running routine $1 trillion federal budget deficits, and we've got plenty of people on the public teat already, though I would rather give public assistance to underpaid Mexican farm labor than to non-working white trash in the trailer park. Nonetheless, without getting out into the statistical weeds, it is certainly pretty pricey absorbing tens of millions of poor folk, however deserving you think they are. Besides money, there are also issues of security versus open borders. You have to have some control over who's coming into your country on grounds of catching bad guys and enemies who mean us harm. I wouldn't necessarily want to deny entry to people of certain countries or religions, but if you're a Wahhabi Muslim from Pakistan or Yemen, yeah, I would appreciate if the Department of Homeland Security could maybe take just a little squint at you before you come in to make sure you're not like carrying an Al-Qaeda membership card or something. Sorry if we hurt your feelings there with the horrible arrogance of our white Christian narrative, but niceness has its limits. Now, I've never heard of a Mexican jihadist, though, so we don't have southern immigrants coming for the express purpose of doing us harm. But there are nasty drug cartels that make some areas near to the border unsafe. Besides that, there's lower-level thieving and banging. There's southern immigrants seem to make both motivated workers and sometimes motivated criminals. So there's some significant stuff there to hold against that best fantasy of totally open borders. Now, I'm not going to try to offer solutions to all the problems of immigration because I don't reckon I'm near that smart. Also, I'm wanting to try to start by building a little bit of consensus here. Like, my name was Chief Justice Roberts. So for starters, I will go out on a limb and suggest that the U.S. government should not purposely put thousands of high-powered rifles into the hands of Mexican drug lords. I feel like I'm telling the Obama administration not to stick beans up their nose, but I would venture to advise Attorney General Holder that this fast and furious thing might only tend to exacerbate the problem. Please don't do that anymore. Pretty please with cream and sugar on top. I think that the mouth-breathing right-wing nut jobs and the godless pinko Democrats alike should all be able to agree on at least this much together. Thank you. I feel the love. So there's one beginning principle. First, do no harm. There may not be any good solution to all the problems of immigration, but we can maybe try not to do anything really overtly stupid to exacerbate the problem. Even the most rabid anti-immigrant American sons of immigrants would not think that we're going to seriously just massively pack up and deport millions of people. So they devise a strategy of generating quote-unquote self-deportation, as Mitt Romney, for one, has put it. By this, they mean creating tighter and tighter legal restrictions to, by discomfort, encourage immigrants to go home semi-voluntarily. I would consider a lot of those kind of punitive restrictions to qualify under my to-be-avoided heading of overtly stupid things that will exacerbate the problem. I will highlight one simple example from my recent personal experience. So, one cold, very rainy day last fall, I had to slog 30 miles to the Shelby County, Indiana courthouse at 8:30 in the consarn morning to answer successfully, thank you, to some bogus traffic charges. But I got stuck sitting for an extra hour because this rural Indiana County court was clogged full of Mexicans. They were pretty much all there for the same charge, which was simply driving without a license. So then here in Indiana, you can't get a basic driver's license without documentation of your legal status, without an American birth certificate or green card or such. First of all, that vision of the Shelbyville courtroom struck me in a perhaps subjective way as spiteful, petty, and mean. It's certainly not good Hoosier hospitality. Doesn't strike me as sounding very Christian either, which is bad because I have to make everything here fit into my white Christian narrative, right? But besides not being a very Christ-like way of treating your brother, this policy would seem likely to be substantially counterproductive to the public good. I've heard some grumbling about issues with people in some parts of the country having common traffic accidents with Mexicans who, surprise, don't have insurance. I haven't seen any signs of such issues in southern Indiana specifically, but I would see that as an obvious likely byproduct of these strictures on driver's licenses. Poor immigrant might scrape up a little money for basic liability insurance on an old beater car to get around in, but how are you going to get insurance if you flatly don't have a driver's license and you're illegally be on the road, period? Could you even get insurance under such conditions, and at what price? Yeah, so you end up just taking your chances. That would seem to be the likely thing that a lot of reasonable people would end up pretty much feeling like they have to do. That seems like what I might likely would do in such circumstances. I'm also going to tend to take a similar attitude to anything that involves punishing people for working or people for hiring workers. Besides, again, not being very nice, surely trying to punish people for wanting to legitimately work can only have bad consequences. If having any kind of job is illegal, and you prevented them from even having legal transport to get to a job, well, you don't have to have a green card or insurance to sell weed on the corner. That's not wickedness, nor necessarily any actual criminal intention against anyone else. That's just a poor boy trying to scratch out a living. If you block them off for more preferred ways of doing that, you're inevitably going to get more of the less preferred ways. I'm just saying. I mostly try not to be unnecessarily judgmental, because I don't much enjoy it, nor do I generally find such displays morally seemly. But I must take a brief moment to ever so gently rebuke mouth-breathers of whatever political stripe who come across morally indignant about so-called illegal immigrants. What part of illegal don't I understand? They're disrespecting and breaking our laws just by being here. This will get us to perhaps deeper and more profound philosophical musings about authority and legitimacy on another day. But for our purposes today, I'll just say generally that I don't believe that absolutely any statute has any presumption of legitimate moral authority just by being passed into law by some legislature or bureaucracy. In different ways, probably most Americans would agree with me on that one. We're bred to be a little bit hostile to the government, though Democrats especially are working hard to breed that out of us now. I mostly want to try to blend in with the law, though, because what other good options do you have? But sometimes the law is an ass and does not deserve respect. Now, I'm all in favor of the government stopping people from robbing and raping. Support your local sheriff. Right on. But, and however, if simply breathing while Mexican is against the law, then the law is an ass. And so is anyone who gets up on their moral high horse about it. Shut your pie holes and spare me, because I swear by Snoop Dogg that I will bring the pimp hand down on you with a quickness.
What Americans, what? Nothing better to do? Why don't you kick yourself out? You're an immigrant too!
As I speak here in 2012, apparently immigration from Mexico is way down, and maybe even going the other way. So hey, it's a problem sort of half solved for the moment. The solution seems to be having President Obama destroy the American economy to the point that the Mexican economy is actually in better shape, apparently. I think, though, that this might very likely qualify as an example of throwing out the baby with the bathwater. Surely somebody smarter than me or a maroon like Obama could come up with some better ideas than simply burning down the house. There's got to be at least a somewhat better way of dealing with our issues. But just in general, even if practical problems make you feel that we have to be less accommodating or welcoming than we'd like to be to our southern neighbors, you don't have to dehumanize and vilify them. We might have some issues, but Mexicans are people too, okay? So, in conclusion then, I think you should try to treat your Mexicans at least as good as you treat your livestock. It's the decent Christian thing to do. Winding it up in the gratitude corner today, I want to thank the Lord for the many years He has blessed America with strong, fresh immigrant blood to build our country by whatever rough passage. I thank my mother, Edith Holler, for giving me life. I'm grateful for all the Ashleys I've known, including a couple in particular that are close to my heart these days. I'm definitely grateful to Fiona Apple for writing Every Single Night and a whole bunch of other great songs and for blowing our minds at the Marat. And I thank Dr. BLT for contributing my theme song for this humble show. I've got a short pair of closing scriptures today, starting with the second verse of the book of Hebrews, chapter 13, which says, "Forget not to show love unto strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares." And finally, among my personal, very favorite bits of Holy Writ, words written in stone by Our Lady in the Harbor at Ellis Island. "Give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses yearning to breathe free, the wretched refuse of your teeming shore. Send these, the homeless, tempest-tossed, to me. I lift my lamp beside the golden door." And amen.